started talking a minute ago to game plan what we were going to talk about on this episode, and we came to the realization that, like, everything seems terrible for the Rockies until, like, 2 days before we're going to record, and then things, like, turn back into being decent.
Yeah, I mean, this is the third straight day that we've recorded where the team is 2 games over .500.
Like, they, you know... It's like in a cartoon when a kid's trying to get away with something, and then the parent looks real quick and the kid stops. And that's pretty much the Rockies with us. Like, we want to yell and be angry, and then we look at them and go, "Hey, knock it off." And they're like, "I wasn't doing anything. I'm two games over .500.
Yeah, they scored 2 games in a series in Miami to the dreadful Marlins, then go to Wrigley and take 2 of 3, including beating the crap out of the Cubs on Wednesday afternoon.
Yep. Yu Darvish, not good. Yu Darvish is really
more like
good.
He, Yu Darvish.
More like Boo Darvish. Oh, I get it.
Oh,
because they were booing him yesterday. Either one.
You got served, Yu Darvish.
Your Colorado Rockies, your my and our Colorado Rockies now, not the worst offense in the National League, but the second worst offense in the National League, a .226 hitting club through 32 games.
We're number two.
Yeah.
We're number two.
Get excited, folks. That is really something. The Rockies also, by the way, have the fourth worst staff ERA in the National League. The three teams worse than the Rockies in staff ERA are respectively 11-21, 11-19, and 7-24. The Padres, Marlins, and Reds.
But
the
their
Rockies
run differential.
4.32 staff ERA, and they're 17-15 somehow.
Well, they have there's a fourth worst staff ERA, and the staff over the last 8 games has posted a 1.70 ERA.
That's been markedly better. It's strange. There's a lot to talk about. Hey, welcome inside this week's edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, presented by the good folks at purplerow.com. My name is Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
And, the last week has been a strange one. The Rockies go on the road. They end up, you know, splitting a 6-game road trip. That's totally fine. They've won 5 out of their last 8 while the pitching staff has looked terrific. But you still, like, you don't look at this team and think, like, yeah, this is a team that's playing its best ball. I don't think there's been, like, a single game yet this year in which you could say that. There's probably been one. Yesterday was pretty good. But,
I mean, yeah, they scored 10 runs in a game for the first time all season yesterday.
Yeah, the Colorado Rockies. 10 runs for the first time all season in a game on May 2nd.
Well, you just know they're going to hit.
Yeah, you just know this team. This team, always. Yeah, I don't know. I think there is so much that we still don't know what to make of with this team as of yet. They, you know, this is kind of the rocky season in a nutshell. Over April 24th to April 27th, or rather April 21st to April 27th, they won 4 out of 6 games. That's fine. But that was also out of a larger stretch of them losing 7 out of 11 games. So it's like that seems to be like, oh, you take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and then you have the 2018 Colorado Rockies.
Yeah, they're kind of like lurching forward and lurching back. They're like, it's like stop and go traffic with the Rockies right now.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty true.
And if you're in the back seat, you're going to get a little bit nauseous.
And they're making a little bit of headway at 2 games over .500. So it really is. It's like stop and go traffic.
Yeah.
It's strange. Los Angeles traffic.
Ugh, yeah. Don't remind me. I'm going to have to be dealing with LA traffic a lot more lately because the wife and I apparently just got a house. So,
oh yeah, I saw on somewhere on the old Instagram. What's the deal?
So we got a nice 3-bedroom house in Reseda, just like the Tom Petty song.
Living in Reseda.
Exactly.
Is there a freeway running through the yard?
Not where we are. We're kind of away from the freeway,
song
which is the nice part.
End.
I know. So we're hopefully moving in by the end of the month. So
very
that means
cool.
my commute to work won't be 5 minutes anymore.
Look at you.
I know.
Reseda always makes me think, A, obviously, of the Tom Petty song, but also B, of Robert Marcial, who was like the longest tenured member of the Myrtle Beach Pelicans.
Oh, the Pelicans, yeah.
In 2009, and then he got released after getting into a verbal altercation on the field with Pelicans manager Rocket Wheeler.
A real person.
Yeah. Yeah, Rocket real Wheeler. Name. Still managing. I think he's in Rome now, Danville maybe.
So is Missile with him, his son?
I would think so.
Yeah.
Missile Wheeler and Rocket Wheeler. And presumably one day when Missile has his own kid, it'll be like ICBM Wheeler or something.
AR-15 dealer.
Bobo was Robert Marcial, 67 games that year. And then at the end of that stretch, and to be fair, he had been in Class A Advanced for 4 years, which, like, nobody wants to be in Class A Advanced for. Class A Advanced for 2 years. But he was like a pretty low draft selection, as I remember. Oh, no, wait. He was undrafted, apparently, and but went to high school in Reseda. And then I don't remember what happened exactly. There was a game. They were on the road. And somehow he ended up getting into an altercation with Rocket on the field after the game. And he, like, untucked his jersey and Rocket told him to tuck it in. And he basically, like, told him to F off. And he got, like, a shouting match. And then he got released.
He dared Sutton him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was depressing.
You will wear this team-issued polo. I want to wear a suit and a tie. You will wear this polo. I don't want to.
How dare you.
You're fired.
You're fired. And so that's all I know about Reseda, that and the song. But that's cool, though. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It's the first time I've lived in a house since I was in high school. So that'll be fun.
Isn't it so weird how you go, you just, like, wander in the wilderness through your 20s and 30s, like, moving every year and or every couple of years. And it's strange. For all of you dorks who are listening to us in high school, you have that to look forward to soon.
Can't wait.
Strange, very strange. The last week of Rockies baseball, they lose three straight, two to Miami and one to the Cubs after a road trip opening win. And you think, like, oh god, they could go 1-5 on this trip. Then they bounce back, beat the Cubs 3-1. John Gray pitches a dominant game in a conditions which would not suggest having pitching success at all against the Cubs on the second day of that series on Tuesday. And that game started off, Charlie Blackmon and David Dahl go back-to-back leading off the top of the first. Anthony Rizzo hits a home run leading off the bottom of the first. And then there was one more run scored the entire game on
Homer. You're thinking it's going to be 12-10.
Yeah, exactly.
15-14 because the wind's blowing out.
Listed on the box score, the wind was 16 miles an hour, which means it was probably like 25 miles an hour.
At least,
And blowing straight out to center field. And like Anthony Rizzo, like Chuck and Dahl hit like piss rockets. I mean, those things were shots.
Yes.
Anthony Rizzo's home run, like, when that came off the bat, the Cubs broadcast treated it like it was going to be a 280-foot pop-out, and it ends up carrying out. And that was when you're like, oh, God, this is going to be a long day. And then John Gray buckles down, gets through seven innings, gives up only that run, drops his ERA under the five mark, strikes out six, walks one. And the latest in a stretch of guys to go seven innings. Tyler Anderson did it yesterday, and that has been a very, very welcome sign.
Well, yeah, and the thing is with the Rockies right now, they are on a streak they have not really done too often in their franchise history. They have had four straight pitchers, starting pitchers, go seven innings. That hasn't happened since 2015. If one more goes tomorrow in New York, if another goes five innings, it's the first time it'd be happening since 2009. It's not just the fact the Rockies pitchers are going deep into games, but they're effective while they're doing it. They're not just there to eat innings at all. Because in these last eight games where the Rockies are 5-3, unfortunately, they're only 5-3, the starting rotation has an ERA of 1.68. They're striking out more than a batter per inning. They've given up 29 hits in 48 and a third innings. That is a 171 opponent batting average and a 4.5-1 strikeout to walk ratio. That'll play. That'll play.
Yeah, that'll be fine. That has been good. What has not been good has been the offense, and the Rockies made a very perplexing move this week, in which they sent Ryan McMahon back to AAA. And we've actually got a story up at MILB.com today in which one of our writers who is based, a new guy who's based in Seattle, went to Tacoma, where AAA Albuquerque is right now, and talked to Ryan McMahon about where he is and what the decision felt like to him. And Ryan McMahon, to his credit, is saying all the right things, has the right attitude. But, like, what the hell was the point of Ryan McMahon being on the opening day roster?
That is a great question. Because
I cannot parse this out. This baffles me.
Yeah, we thought it was going to be McMahon making the team, which we were kind of on the fence with initially, because they thought, you know, the Rockies don't want to put a guy like that at the big league roster initially, yada, yada, yada. He made the team, and so we thought, oh, he's going to get some at-bats. He's going to get an opportunity to, I don't know, become a major leaguer, I guess.
Be an actual major leaguer, maybe?
Be an actual major leaguer. Then he ended up making one start in his first nearly 2 weeks, He only made 11 starts all told. He had a grand total of 50 at-bats. He had 9 hits. He walked 10 times, so the OBP is actually decent. And he got sent down.
And, you know, like, he started performing better the more regular playing time he got.
He really only got playing time when Nolan Arenado was suspended. Consistent playing time.
I just don't – I don't get this at all. You know, and it's – Daniel Castro was scored – I think it was on a 22-game hitting streak to get things started this season in Albuquerque. And that's great. That's fine. But Ryan McMahon is the issue with this team? You put your number two ranked prospect on your major league roster to open the season. You continue trotting a guy out in Ian Desmond who couldn't hit his – who couldn't hit water if he fell off the boat right now. And Ryan McMahon is the change that you make? Like, and we've talked about this, and obviously there's a lot that goes into it, whether it's, you know, the handedness and stuff with Pat Valaika remaining on the roster as a right-handed guy versus a left-handed guy, and Ryan McMahon being a left-handed hitter. But still, like, Pat Valaika has hit – he's got, like, 5 hits and 50-some trips to the plate this year. Ryan McMahon – seemingly is starting to get it figured out. His offensive tool is his best asset as a professional ball player, and he's the guy who doesn't get regular playing time and then gets sent down.
Noel Cuevas has been with the team for 9 games. He's had 20 at bats. He already has more base hits than Tony Wolters and Pat Valaika this year. In 20 at bats, he has more base hits already.
That's the other thing I don't get. And it's, yes, there are a lot more things that go into these decisions than there are, you know, than you cognizantly can realize at the time, whether it's players who have options left or who is available to take roster spots at various places in the minor league organization. It's not quite as simple as just, oh, well, this guy sucks and this guy's good, so we should bring this guy up and send that guy down.
Rarely is it like that. Yeah.
Yeah. For example, Tony Wolters only has one option left. So if you utilize that this season, Tony Wolters is out of minor league options, and that's that. Tom Murphy has 2 options left. Right now has been crushing everything that's been thrown his way in AAA Albuquerque, but is remaining there, and Tony Wolters is getting a decent amount of time behind the plate for the Rockies, and that's a scenario that you would think would be addressed a little bit more quickly than Ryan McMahon being sent down, but that hasn't happened. Through 23 games, Tom Murphy slashing .307, .374, .602. He's got 6 homers and 8 doubles of his 27 hits. Of all the moves that I expected to be made, Ryan McMahon being optioned and Daniel Castro coming up was not on my radar.
No. Because we wanted to see what Ryan McMahon could do with a fully given opportunity to perform at the big league level. And that has not happened at all this year, at all. So now we get sent down to AAA to go prove nothing, because he's already proven whatever he needs to prove at AAA. Getting consistent at-bats will be good for him, I guess, but that's not the problem. The problem is the fact that Ian Desmond is still getting written in that lineup every single day, hitting .173. And honestly, I'm surprised it's that high.
Yeah, that does feel high, actually. And has not been over 200.
Hit, one hit to left field this year.
Hasn't been over 200 since April 11th. April 12th. Sorry,
you're
I don't want to short
that
him
he
a day.
Hits his weight like now. Like, that's...
Well, his weight's 215, so he's a ways off.
That's what I'm saying.
It's wowzers.
The best thing that I saw this week was that when the Rockies game was on ESPN, I think Monday, and all year, like, the FSN Root RM Rocky Mountain team has, you know, so like, oh, Ian Desmond's going to figure it out. He'll be fine. He'll be fine. He's going to hit.
You just know this team's going to hit.
Just know that team's going to hit. And Eduardo Perez, usually who I don't really rely on for very good analysis that often, he saw Ian Desmond after like an at bat and goes, oh, he's got a hitch in his swing. That's why he's so late on the ball. That's why he can't pull the ball to left field. And it's why he's having so much of an issue at the plate this year. And you're like, oh, okay. I hope someone's telling Ian Desmond that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you would think, is somebody going to get in Ian Desmond's ear about all this at some point?
About Maybe. Any of this at all? Like, literally anything? I mean, he is performing well enough against lefties this year that it's not a big deal if he starts and leads off and whatever against left-handed pitching. Right now, the slash line for Desmond against lefties, .300, .378, .575, a .953 OPS. That is okay. That's great. Yeah. In fact, his OPS or his slash line against right-handed pitching, 094, 119, 172, a 291 OPS. He basically worse than a pitcher against same-handed hurlers.
You know what I find intriguing about that? You know who is traditionally good against right-handed pitching?
A left-handed batter?
Left-handed batters. You know who's a left-handed batter?
Ryan McMahon?
Ryan McMahon. You know who gets most of his time at first base this year?
Pat Valaika?
Ian Desmond and Ryan McMahon. And Pat Valaika is the one who's actually getting the time. Like, I don't understand in any way how Ryan McMahon is the one that the Rockies look at and go, nah, he needs to be in Albuquerque. I don't get that at all. At all.
I think it really just is the fact that the Rockies have always relied too much on veterans, especially veterans that are being paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that's what Ian Desmond is.
You know, so far, I think I've been wrong on most projections when it comes to Ian Desmond, such as, oh, well, he couldn't possibly be as bad as last year.
Yeah, sure, I literally said that multiple times.
Created things. Yeah, my take on it was always, Ian Desmond doesn't strike me as the type of guy who's going to go into the offseason and be pleased with what he did in 2017, so I'm sure he's going to come out with a changed approach in 2018. That hasn't been anything even approaching the case so far this year. And beyond that, I have never had the inclination that the Rockies were putting somebody in the lineup because he was getting paid a lot of money. I didn't think that Bud Black and Jeff Breidich were going to be of that ilk. And I'm not saying that they are. I'm not saying that's the reason why Ian Desmond's in the lineup. But give me another reason why Ian Desmond's in the lineup, you know?
Because he is the worst batting average against right-handed pitchers in the game.
Maybe they just want to see how bad it can get against right-handed pitchers.
Because he's hitting ground balls 73% of the time.
It's almost as though a platoon situation in which one of your first basemen is a left-handed hitter would be a really good idea. That almost seems like it would be a very viable case for the Rockies.
Almost seems like it would work.
Pat Valaika, who was officially listed on his player page as a shortstop, has played virtually nothing but first base this year. He's gotten some time at second base in recent days with DJ LeMahieu being out, but Pat Valaika in the lineup a lot. And yes, obviously they're going to face more left-handed pitching in circumstances where you got Ian Desmond moved around and you need somebody, and Pat Valaika has got to have an opportunity to be in the lineup because Ryan McMahon struggles against left-handed pitch, whatever it is. But I don't know, man. I don't get it. If Ian Desmond is not being put in there because of the amount of zeros in his paycheck, why is he being put in there? He's not providing anything right now. He's not an above-average first baseman. He's not an above-average outfielder. He's not giving you anything at this stage.
He's not an above-average hitter. he's not stealing bases.
He's a well-below-average hitter. Ian Desmond, I like Ian Desmond as – I think Ian Desmond's a good dude. I'll always have a soft spot for Ian Desmond because last year there was a Rockies camp day for Big Brothers Big Sisters that I went to, and Ian Desmond and Scott Oberg were the two players that came out. I'll always have a soft spot for those guys because that's really damn cool. Take time out of your day, go work with underprivileged kids, do whatever. Like, Ian Desmond, I think, is a very good guy. Everybody talks about his clubhouse presence. He's versatile. Yeah. You can put him
in anywhere. He's an all-star good guy. That's not the issue.
Yeah, that's not what's getting you playing time on the field. And right now, he's a black hole in every sense. Offensively, defensively, he's playing adequate baseball. But adequate baseball as a giant, life-sucking gap of nothingness in the lineup, does adequate defense warrant you being put in the lineup on a daily basis? No. No, it does not.
No, it does not.
And when he was put in the leadoff spot, which you kind of thought like, oh, man, look at this. This is actually kind of an inventive thing. Ian Desmond batting leadoff against a left-hander, and John Lester, Ian went 0-for-5.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we want him to face lefties because that's what the only thing he's good at right now is facing lefties. Get him some confidence, that's fine. But, man, it is really, really hard to watch that automatic out in the lineup.
It's brutal. Every single time. It is brutal. And I don't understand the solution being, all right, Daniel Castro. And, you know, to be fair, they have hit well with Daniel Castro in the lineup.
They need somebody to play second base.
Yeah, I don't think correlation is causation. That's the other thing that confuses me. The Rockies had Ryan McMahon play second base a pretty decent amount last year.
Yeah,
and they sure did. They used it as, you know, one of the reasons why – that was an option for the Rockies was, and this is the way that Zach Wilson, the Rockies director of player development, has told me for multiple players, whether it's Brendan Rodgers, who's worked at second and third in addition to working at short, or Ryan McMahon, who's worked all over the place, Jordan Patterson, remember Jordan Patterson? Jordan Patterson has worked all over the place in the outfield of first base, whatever it is. You want to give guys as many tools and as many pathways to the major leagues as possible. That's great, but if you don't use them, then, like, what was the point? Maybe Ryan McMahon was bad at second base. I mean, that's an entirely feasible thing to have happened. I didn't scout him at second base. I didn't see him take any in-game action at second base. I watched him one time in spring training take ground balls at second base. He looked fine to me, but I'm not a major league talent evaluator. But, like, is that a worse option right now than, for example, Ian Desmond being in your lineup every day?
By the way, Ryan McMahon has had one game in AAA Albuquerque since he was sent down. Guess where he started that game?
Second base.
Second base. He made 23 starts at second base last year with Albuquerque. He made 12 starts in Hartford last year as well at second base. He has played enough second base in his career that he could have, at least feasibly, tested it out for a couple of days at the big league level, you know?
Oh, my goodness. You know, going against somebody like Yu Darvish, who theoretically he probably could have had a good day against yesterday because so did everybody else. Goodness gracious. I don't know. I think it just speaks to a larger issue with the Rockies, which is that nobody's hitting right now. And you can kind of spread
it out.
That's
not true. There are two guys that are hitting.
Yeah, there are two guys that are hitting.
They're two good hitters.
The caveat should be, without Nolan Arenado and Charlie Blackman, nobody is hitting. The Rockies are a little bit better against left-handed pitching than they are against right-handed pitching. They're a 249 hitting team against lefties, 212 against righties. But the Rockies have been abysmal at Coors Field so far this season. 255 average at Coors Field is terrible.
Coors.
A 209 average on the road for this team. The Rockies, in 20 games away from Coors Field, have scored now in total 74 runs after yesterday.
Non-Coors.
In 12 games at Coors Field, they have scored 72 runs.
Coors.
So the offensive output is better. No, wait, I misspoke. In 12 games at home at Coors Field, they have scored 55 runs. So the offensive output in 8 fewer games is like, pretty similar.
Usually not great. Yeah,
and that's not great, A. And B, like, 255 is a team average with a 331 on-base percentage and 416 slugging percentage. That seems fine, but it's Coors Field. Like, it is an offensive ballpark. You should have much better numbers than that on a regular basis. And, yes, they haven't played a ton at home yet. But just for comparison's sake, to go back to last season, another team that was not great offensively, that team batted 298 with a 364 on-base percentage and a 498 slugging percentage over the course of last season. 298. And this year they're batting 255 as a team. I just don't. The issue right now is how bad this team is offensively, and I am not seeing any real concrete ways that that's being addressed, because you can't sell me Daniel Castro and tell me that he's Todd Helton.
Well, the issue right now is that the Rockies are, you know, arguably too reliant on the home run. Right now they have the second most or second highest rate of runs via the home run in the big leagues and the highest in the National League. They're getting 48.8% of their runs from home runs this year. So 63 of their 129 runs scored this season have come via the home run. Only the Cleveland Indians are higher at 55%. So when you become too reliant on the home run in that way, sometimes you just wait for it, and sometimes those don't happen. They're also striking out a lot. Third most strikeouts in all of baseball right now. So they are ascribing to that launch angle mentality. Home runs are strikeouts, and that's great, but that means you're going to go through some peaks and valleys when it comes to your offense, and that's what's happening right now. Or at least maybe yesterday was the 11 runs scored against the Cubs at Wrigley Field. Maybe that's the catalyst when they go forward. They have three at Citi Field starting tomorrow and then come back home.
Not a place they traditionally play well.
Not a place they play well. Never since Tulo was there just dominating that place, like, you know, 8 years ago. So maybe that's the catalyst that they start to realize they can hit. But really, it has been just Nolan and Chuck with a few guys sprinkled in here and there. I mean, DJ had a nice week. Trevor had a nice week. David Dahl's been okay. He's striking out a lot, but he's getting on base. You know, those
David
guys
Dahl's been a weird case. He's been a weird case so far. He's got 17 strikeouts through 33 at-bats so far. But he's also a 273 hitter. He's 9 for his first 33 with two triples and a homer. So kind of odd, but odd in a way that you'll take right now. Trevor right. Story, yeah, I really felt like Trevor Story was going to finally start getting it figured out at the end of that homestand and in the start of the road trip through the first two games in Miami. He was a 253, 342, 495 hitter. Then he went hitless for three straight games, dropped off a little bit, but then he bounces back yesterday, has two hits, including a homer. So it looks like Trevor Story is at least, I think, and this is what we've wanted to see from Trevor Story for so long, seems like he's starting to level himself out, which is huge.
That's all we need. We don't want to be Brad Hopp. You know,
he just can't be Everest on one end and the Mariana Trench on the other. Like, if he's just fine rolling hills of productivity, that's okay. Like, I would much rather have that and have Trevor Story be a 245 hitter than have him be a 565 hitter for 2 weeks and then an 072 hitter for 2 weeks.
Right. Like, ideally, like I said, he is 250, 350, 500. That is his that if he can put that slash line and hitting 250, that's fine. That's what you want from Trevor Story. That'd be ideal.
And right now he's a couple games away from that. If he has two good games right now, he's a 235, 321, 470. He's got seven homers. That's second most on the team, tied with Nolan in that category. Trevor Story is actually leading the Rockies in runs batted in with 20 this season. But, you know, he's struck out 41 times so far, which that's also leads the team and is way more than anybody else. That's 14 more than the second most strikeouts on the roster, which are from, guess who? Ian Desmond. And so you know that Trevor Story is going to be feast or famine. Like, that's just Trevor Story's game. It's always been his game. But you'd like to see it be a little bit less feast and a little bit less famine. Like, if it's more rounded out, then that's huge.
It's a well-balanced meal. You're not going on a diet. You're just having smaller portions.
I just don't right now, outside of David Dahl's continued development at the major league level, his continued refinement at the major league level. I mean, this is a guy who hasn't seen major league pitching in 2 years. So right. David Dahl, I think, is going to continue to get incrementally better and better, and has started off fine. I don't know what else you do right now with this team. Ryan McMahon is your closest, best offensive prospect, and you just send him back to AAA. You know, Brendan Rodgers is not walking through that door, folks.
There are only so many guys on the roster that Bud Black can write in.
I don't know, like, where else you look to get some help offensively. Tom Murphy seems like a no-brainer of a solution behind the plate, but there is so much more that goes into it with catchers that I'm not even going to begin to suggest that I know what exactly the Rockies are looking for from Tom Murphy at the AAA level right now. But, I mean, it's not as though the Rockies are getting world-changing defensive work from Chris Iannetta and Tony Walters either.
Yeah, no, like, Chris Iannetta's really fallen off offensively as well.
Yeah, Chris Iannetta started fine and has been very mediocre since.
No, but right now the guys in the 40-man are Yency Almonte, Jairo Diaz, Jeff Hoffman, Scott Oberg, Tom Murphy, Ryan McMahon, and then Tapia, Tauchman, and Jordan Patterson. That's who you have right now without having to make a more significant move. So you got to go with the guys with the guys you have. You got to dance with the dates that brung you, you know?
Yeah, apparently. Tom Murphy, to be fair, not having a terrific start defensively, at least by traditional measures. He's got a 982 fielding percentage. He's made three errors so far this year in 18 games behind the plate, and he's only thrown out six of 21 potential base stealers against him. But, like, at this stage, if I'm the Rockies, I think I'm okay with substandard defensive work if it brings me above-average offensive work.
Right.
They're seeing more. Yeah. Well, and maybe they're seeing more from Walters and from Iannetta and the way they're handling the pitching staff.
Sure.
And that's the side that they're erring on. And if that's the case, that's fine. I mean, the pitching staff, those results have borne it out over the last 8 days, especially. But it's just like there are so many black holes in this lineup. Like, the catcher spot is one. Ian Desmond is one. Seemingly one other spot every day in the lineup. It's been just a complete voided absence. I don't know. And like you said, maybe yesterday serves as some type of spark. Yesterday they go out, everybody hits against the Cubs. Good day for the offense. That's terrific. You need those sometimes in baseball. As cliche as it is, that stuff is cliche for a reason. The whole concept of hitting being contagious, there's a reason behind that.
Right.
And when you are an offensive team that's been struggling, there's really not much that benefits you more than everybody going out and everybody hitting. And they get out yesterday, put up 11 runs in a game that started by a guy who got a whole lot of money to be a big-time pitching addition to that roster. and Yu Darvish. They put up 15 hits against the Cubs yesterday. And the thing I liked about that game was that the Rockies poured it on late. I mean, they go into the eighth inning, and they've got a 6-2 lead, and you feel good about it. And then they put up 5 runs in the eighth. Like that, when an offense is like, no, let's continue doing this because we haven't had one of these games yet this year, that's good. I think that's big for an offense.
Yeah, and they needed it because, you know,
yeah.
We get to 6-1 or whatever early on. You're like, oh, we can just cruise. But the Rockies usually don't have that luxury of cruising right. through games where they score a lot early because it always seems to come back late. And
yeah.
No one had a second home run, taking advantage of some miscues from the Cubs. It was a really nice game, a nice win. It was a good series win in Chicago to make up for the fact they lost the series at home to the Cubs and just get that horrible taste of that Miami series out of their mouths. I mean, 2 runs in 27 innings against the Marlins. Are you kidding me? Like, come on.
Yeah.
Get out of here with that. Get out of here with that.
And yeah, granted, the Marlins were coming off a series win and they
had Kershaw. Come on.
But like, you know, every blind squirrel finds a nut now and then. You should still be able to go to Miami and score more than 2 runs in 27 innings. Like, there's no way to put.
They're lucky they won a game in that series scoring 2 runs.
Yeah, they really are. The only run that gave them a win in that series was driven home by Antonio Senzatella.
Yes.
Like, what? Come on. I would just like to point out University of Nebraska product Brian Dunsing was the only pitcher to throw yesterday for the Cubs and not give up a run. I just – like they go to New York. They suck in New York generally. And they come home and they get the Angels. We're going to have Ohtani hitting 900-foot dongs, presumably at Coors Field.
Probably.
In the lineup.
Yeah.
And then the Brewers. And the Brewers, you know, I mean, that's a team. That NL Central right now is bizarre. Everybody is so tightly. That's like a sardine can with the exception of the Reds.
Except for the Reds.
Everybody in that division. Brewers are leading that division at 19-13. The Cardinals are a half game back. The Cubs are a game back. And the Pirates are a game and a half back.
Yeesh.
And then there's the 7-24 Cincinnati Reds. We're 11.5 out already.
God bless them.
On May 3rd.
No, it's like the AL East. The Orioles have played 30 games and they're 14 games back of the Red Sox.
Good God. That is insane.
How?
So, yeah, I mean, it's funny because we're Rockies fans, so we're naturally nihilistic, and I think we're just expecting for the other shoe to drop at any point. But we come on and we nitpick all these things, and you know, the fact of the matter is, they're a second place team right now.
Yeah, they're 2 games over 500. Yeah.
They're 2 games over 500. They're a half game ahead of the Giants. They're 2.5 up on the Dodgers. Padres are 11 games back in the division, so they're 6 games back of the Rockies. Like, they've played fine, but what you need to see from the Rockies is they need to have and we said this last year too, because they didn't start hot at home last year either. You want to see them come home for a 6 game homestand and go 5-1. Like, that yes. would really start to inspire some confidence.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't gotten too high or too low this year. Their longest winning streak is 3 games. Longest losing streak is 3 games. So, you know, it's – you would love them to go win 4 or 5 in a row just because. Just because they can. That'd be nice. But that's a tough road when you come back, because Angels and Brewers are 2 pretty good teams. And then you go on the road for San Diego, San Francisco, and L.A. NOS swing. So
yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's getting easier. Though,
no.
It could be getting easier if the Dodgers continue to stumble and fall and lose guys left and right.
Yeah, and that's one of the topics that we were going to dive into today. The Los Angeles Dodgers are a team in... I don't want to say a free fall, but they're definitely a team in somewhat dire straits right now. The Dodgers lost Hyunjin Ryu yesterday.
They are getting money for nothing. You're right.
They are. That's true. I believe they
dire
it
straits
a hamstring
joke.
Strain.
Check.
That's a good dire straits humor. That's what the people come to the podcast for. I think it was deemed a hamstring strain yesterday for Hyunjin Ryu, and he leaves his start early.
He's on the DL now. They just put him on
He's on the DL now. Yeah. Justin Turner, there's still really not a timeline on Justin Turner's return. But the big news, Corey Seager, Tommy John surgery done for the season.
God.
And that's like, you know, if you're a Rockies fan, I think Corey Seager probably comes across as a dude who's very easy to dislike because he's just like straight ahead,
good at everything,
business bro, and he's great on the baseball field. Corey Seager, I think, is a really likable guy. I think he's a very, you and I have talked about these guys a lot. Like, I don't think outside of baseball there would be much for Corey Seager to do in life, but I like that about Corey Seager. Like, he was a baseball player who was born to be a baseball player. That's a bummer. Like, losing young, really prominent stars in the game of baseball is bad news no matter who it is. And that sucks. And Corey Seager, especially, it's one thing if, you know, Seager's legging out a triple and turns an ankle weird on a bag and he misses some time. But, like, Tommy John surgery for a shortstop, like, that sucks.
Well, Gleyber Torres had that last year. Torres the Yankees way. Prospect.
And his situation was weird because Torres, it was in his non-throwing arm, and it was an injury suffered in a slide at home plate. Right. There was a catcher trying to tag him, and he kind of got his elbow pinned under him, and that tore the ligament, the UCL, in his left arm. Seager, I didn't even really hear the full story behind the injury. I mean, I would just assume it's kind of an injury that comes along from having to throw a lot. But, like, this is strange. It seems like this has popped up a little bit more and more of position players having to get Tommy John surgery. But this sucks. And talk about burying the lead. The Dodgers tweet said, quote, today the Dodgers recalled Breivik Valera from AAA Oklahoma City and placed Corey Seager on the 10-day DL with a right UCL sprain. Seager will undergo Tommy John surgery and will miss the remainder of the season.
You're like, okay. What?
This, yeah. Nobody will understand what happened. And here's another thing that I don't get, and it's something that baseball people would be able to explain pretty easily, I'm sure, but why, if you know a guy is going for Tommy John surgery, why put him initially on the 10-day DL? I don't get that.
Yeah, I paper moves. I mean,
seems strange to me.
That's all. But no, from what I was able to gather about Corey Seager is that he had an injury issue last year. They decided not to go forward with any kind of surgery in the offseason, and so they decided they will rest it, see what happens. Corey Seager's apparently not a guy who likes to rest a lot. He takes a lot of swings, takes BP a lot. He really likes it. But when you're a lefty swinger and you throw right, you're taking a lot of BP, you get a lot of friction up against that right elbow, which eventually he ended up having to get the surgery on. And so for some reason that he's such a gym rat, such a guy who loves taking BP and taking cuts all day, that probably just exacerbated the injury to a point where it was past the point of no return.
Sucks. Sucks for the Dodgers. It sucks for baseball. And it speaks to a larger situation with the Dodgers in which, I mean, that team right now is not good. They're not playing good ball, and they're certainly not getting any help health-wise. Yeah, they've lost 7-9. They are 13-17 overall this season. And, you know, it's just – it's strange. And Dave Roberts gave a quote last week, I think the day before the Seager news came out, in which he said, by the end of the year, the Dodgers will still be on top. Talking about the D-backs and their hot start and the division and yada, yada. And then the next day, I'm pretty sure, we got the Seager news, and it was like, ugh.
Yeah.
At some point. And the Dodgers have played with fire like this, not with super serious injuries, with the exception of Clayton Kershaw missing time with the back thing. But the Dodgers have played with injury stuff. I shouldn't say played with, because it's not like they're trying to do this. But the Dodgers have, like, been able to maneuver their way around injury issues for the last few seasons and still be tremendously successful. But losing Corey Seager for the year, with no possibility that he comes back before the end of the season, that is a brutal blow.
And he's not a guy that you can replace. You don't have the Dodgers always have some kind of big prospect coming up to always win Rookie of the Year. There's no guy they have to replace Corey Seager. You're going to be throwing Chris Taylor back in there at shortstop, or Kike Hernandez, or whomever. I mean, the fact of the matter is the Dodgers pitching staff just isn't what it used to be. Clayton Kershaw, I mean, he's 1-4, whatever, blah, 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 pitcher wins. The Dodgers are 2-5 in Clayton Kershaw's starts. Whoa. That should never happen. Hyunjin Ryu was pitching very, very well. He's now on the DL. Alex Wood's ERA is over 4. Kenta Maeda, still a 5-and-dive guy. His ERA is near 5. Rich Hill's ERA is 6. He's been on the DL. Walker Buehler's looked pretty good his first two starts, but he's still 11 years old. You know, they don't have the depth that they once did. And that was always their strength. They had the depth to replace guys at the big league level coming up and just filling gaps in a system. They don't have that right now because they've lost guys that they really cannot afford to lose. And if you don't have a lead, you can't even get it to Kenley Jansen. And when you get it to Kenley Jansen, he's been struggling.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. So it's strange. I mean, they've got, you know, basically two prospects that could really make any type of impact. Yasiel Puig also on the disabled list. Alex Verdugo is their number 2 prospect. He's an outfielder. Walker Buehler has already been up at the major leagues this year and made a couple of starts at the big league level. But, like, I don't think Walker Buehler is a franchise savior. I think he's got the potential to be a very good starting pitcher. But outside of that, like, there's nobody there to take that spot for Corey Seager. And to be fair, not like there are many people that are going to be able to take that spot and be anything remotely like Corey Seager, but the best infield prospect in that organization is at Class A Advanced in Gavin Lux. So you're not going to see Gavin Lux for a while. Yeah, there's just not a whole lot in the reserves. And for a while with the Dodgers, it seemed like they were just graduating dude after dude after dude.
Oh, whether like it was Jock Peterson. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they won the Rookie of the Year every year for five straight years in the 90s,
every year. You know, but even in recent years with Corey Seager and with Jock Peterson and with Cody Bellinger. Yeah. And all these dudes that have come up. And right now, that system is just way thinner than it's been. And, you know, all of this is not to say that, you know, Rockies fans can't be a little bit excited that maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel. But the Arizona Diamondbacks have been doing nothing but winning so far this year. They're off the best start in franchise history. The D-backs through 30 games are 21-9. And that team doesn't really show any signs of slowing down, and they've kind of taken on the mantle of, like, everybody's hurt and we're still winning. Steven Souza's been on the DL.
He's back today, actually. Souza
comes back today
actually.
Taijuan Walker done for the season. He had Tommy John surgery. They haven't had Shelby Miller the entire year. We had TJ last year. So, like, you know, it's
Robbie Ray's on the DL now.
Yeah, Robbie Ray's on the DL now. Yeah. So it's strange. Like, that team cannot lose. They've got a staff ERA of 2.90 so far this year. And they're not hitting great. Like, that's not a great offensive team right now. Even Goldie, Paul Goldschmidt is only hitting 255 with an 850 OPS. Like, that's not Goldie-like numbers.
Oh, but A.J. Pollock's picked up the mantle. Good. Yeah,
A.J. Pollock has been phenomenal. A.J. Pollock had a 3-homer game. He's got 10 homers so far this season, OPS of 1052. But right now, I mean, like, you look at that team and it's like, is anybody going to catch them? They're 21-9 already.
They pitch so well. I mean, it really they've made no improvements in their offense from last year. In fact, everything's been worse. But their pitching staff has been so outstanding that it hasn't mattered. Now you wonder how they're going to do without Robbie Ray, without Taijuan Walker. I mean, Robbie Ray's a big guy to lose. Robbie Ray's been one of the best pitchers underratedly in the National League over the last couple of seasons. He's been incredible. So losing him, it means you're shifting some guys in the rotation that maybe aren't quite ready. Matt Cook has looked pretty good in his three starts, replacing Taijuan Walker, but now you got other guys to fill in those needs, and we're not really sure what we're going to get because Robbie Ray's been a mainstay there. Patrick Corbin's been the best pitcher in baseball, arguably, you know, so far this season. He's 4-0, a 2.25 ERA, 55 punchouts in 40 innings, only walked 7, and that's always been his issue, is walking guys, but he's been incredible this year. So the D-backs don't really have a lot of weaknesses in their pitching staff, but, you know, we'll see how deep they are. You know, we'll see who comes up and gets those starts in place of Robbie Ray. You know, Zach Godley's been really good, but, you know, Greinke hasn't been for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Does he get better? You know, what's the biggest issue with this team going forward? It's finding out who's going to take those spots in the rotation.
Yeah. And the D-backs, I mean, even more than the Dodgers, have concerns with a lack of depth below the major league level. They don't really have anybody who's above the Class A advanced level at all. John Duplantier was a terrific starting pitcher last year who won, like, every minor league award for pitcher of the year. He's a double A, and he's their top-ranked prospect, but I'd be surprised if we saw John Duplantier this year at all. And then beyond him, it's not really elite-level talent, and there isn't much pitching talent there. There's a couple of pitchers at the lower levels that potentially down the road could be parts of that rotation, but the D-backs, depth-wise, I think that's the difference between the D-backs, the Giants, and even now to an extent the Dodgers versus what the Rockies have. The Rockies do have some more options, some guys that they trust, whether it's Yency Almonte or Jeff Hoffman, some of the talent at AAA. If they did need to go dipping into reserves, I think the Rockies are more confident in those guys than these other organizations are with the guys they have at AAA. So that's something that's an asset. But, you know, right now, I mean, thankfully for the Rockies, pitching health has been there. And it's not the issue. I was texting with my childhood best friend, Travis Owen, about this the other day. And we were talking about, surprise, surprise, Ian Desmond. And I was saying I never thought that I would see the day with a Rockies team where you just thought to yourself, like, man, this offense is the issue. Like, this offense is going to be the make or break thing for this team this year.
Yeah, I mean,
never thought that was going to be the case.
And everybody at FS1 is saying the same things too. I mean, well, I've been saying it since day one. The Rockies don't have enough offense right now to compete. And everyone's like, oh, they're gonna be fine. Everyone knows they're going to hit, kind of thing. Like, literally, yeah. Everyone knows they're going to hit, kind of thing. And then like I come in every day and they're like, man, these Rockies really just can't hit. I'm like, I've been telling you, they have two good hitters.
There are a couple of names that we have not really discussed in their struggle so far this season. And one, I think, is because we beat it into the ground so much last year. But Carlos Gonzalez has been bad again. Cargo is a 233 hitter and hurt. Just came back from the 10-day disabled list. A 671 OPS. He didn't play in the finale yesterday against the Cubs, but he went 0-for-4 the night before. And just, like, not showing many signs of life. And I'm not smart enough to watch Cargo and think, yeah, it's a similar mechanical issue to what he fixed last year. I'm not entirely sure what the issue is, but just, like, Cargo has not been there. Gerardo Parra before yesterday was the same way. Gerardo Parra going into yesterday was a 220 hitter with a 574 OPS. Yes, he goes out and goes 3-for-5. That's his first three-hit day of the season. It's his first day with multiple extra base hits this season. And prior to yesterday, he had only combined, had four extra base hits to begin with. He had two doubles yesterday. He had three doubles and a homer going into yesterday. He's driven in four runs.
Summer of Parra.
Gerardo Parra. Yeah, Cargo's only driven in 11, and Cargo has been asked basically to be, for whatever reason, still a lot of the time a middle-of-the-order guy, and he's not a middle-of-the-order hitter anymore.
He's got to get some sleep, or whatever
apparently
happened last
sleep
year.
And change the grip of his bat.
Yeah.
Like, those
go
things,
back to that.
It's so bizarre, because it was such a marked difference last year of like, oh, he got it figured out. Presumably he's going to be fine this year, having figured out all that stuff from last year, and just, no, like, it's just back to the same.
Yeah, I want to see last September Cargo when he hit 377 with six homers and 16 RBI.
What happened to that guy?
And he walked 15 times.
And he's 31.
Yeah, he's not.
That's what's so crazy
he's
about
not
Cargo.
Like 38. He's not Albert Pujols right now.
No, like, this isn't like an over the hill dude. Exactly. Yeah. I just don't understand that at all. And so it's strange. Like, you look at all these other teams as part of this larger conversation. Like, the Padres are not in the conversation because that's a team that's still rebuilding, but I think the Padres are going to be scary starting next year or the year after. Like, there's a ton of talent in that system. They're going to be good. The Giants are still hanging around, but the Giants, more than anybody, I think, really suffer from the depth issue. Although, to be fair, Madison Bumgarner has not pitched a game for that team yet this season. Jeff Samardzija has been hurt. They've gone back and forth with guys being thrown into the mix, and still are at the 500 mark or a little bit above. But that team, like, you kind of wonder how long that's going to be able to hold out. The Rockies just, like, this is positioned so well for them right now to break away from the pack and be a team that has a stranglehold on second place in the division and can try to chase down the D-backs. They just haven't put together a stretch of consistent ball at all yet.
The doors are opening. The Dodgers aren't there. The D-backs are playing well, but the Giants are somehow playing well. They're one game over 500, but they have the same run differential as the Rockies right now. I'm not sure we trust them going forward that much. The Padres are the Padres, you know. So without the Dodgers there, that is a key figure in the National League West that is really on the ropes right now. And you got a chance, if you could win a few games in a row, maybe put some separation between yourself and the Dodgers. Right now, there are three games separating the Rockies and the Dodgers right now in the standings. If you win a few more, you maybe got a chance to increase that a little bit. Now, the Rockies have not played the Dodgers yet, but it says coming up on the next road trip. So it's these weird unbalanced schedules this year. The Rockies have really not played too many games inside the NL West except for the Padres.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the D-backs to begin the season.
97 times.
Yes, with the Padres 97 times and the D-backs to open the season for three. They've not faced the Giants yet. They've not faced the Dodgers yet. But that'll all change the middle of this month.
And it'll give us a decent read maybe on where this team is and where they're going. The Rockies on the road in New York coming up this weekend. And that'll be interesting because that Mets team is one that has played really well. They're 17-11, but they've still had very Metsian drama. Matt Harvey moved to the bullpen like literally the day after he said, I'm a starting pitcher and I've always been a starting pitcher. And then he got moved to the bullpen.
How did that go?
Jacob DeGrom apparently injured, maybe not injured. They anticipate that he'll make his next start after he pitched yesterday. Only went four innings against the Braves, but it was evaluated by a doctor after coming out of that game and apparently is fine. You know, outside of like Asdrubal Cabrera, that team really isn't hitting that well. We talked about this last week. Like, Yoenis Cespedes has bumped his average up to 252, but he's still only OPSing 783. But that's really on the strength he's riding right now. I think an 8-game hitting streak. So that's been big. But, like, the Mets haven't been world beaters, and somehow they've been really, really good to start the season. They have slipped into second place in that division, a half game behind the Braves. But this will be an interesting series coming up this weekend because these are two teams that I think are in very similar spots in which they think they can contend, but they have to be able to prove it in a larger – I think the Mets have done a better job of this so far than the Rockies have, but in a larger context of just this roster is constructed well. If everybody stays healthy, we like our chances. Like, they've got to be able to go out and show this can be done on a consistent basis. The Mets did that a little bit earlier on in the season when they got off to that hot start. They've cooled off a bit since. But the Rockies have also played 4 more games than the Mets at this stage, which is a little weird. But it's been such a strange weather year, yeah, all around major, yeah, league and minor league baseball too. So I don't know, this weekend's gonna be interesting. The Rockies will send Chad Bettis, Ramon Marquez, and John Gray, and or in Kyle Freeland rather, and you know, Kyle Freeland was terrific his last time out. Chad Bettis was too. Ramon Marquez, you know, I would be not shocked to see this start be the next big step forward for Marquez. Last time out, he goes 6 innings on the road to Miami, gave up 3 runs, but only one of them was earned. Looked pretty good in that start. He's got to be more efficient. He threw 113 pitches in that game, 75 pitches in 3 1/3 against the Cubs the game prior to that, which, yeah, he got rocked for 6 runs over 3 1/3. But before that, 97 pitches in that road win over the Pirates over 6 innings. Like, if he can start kind of reining that stuff in, you know, I think there is a lot out of Ramon Marquez that you really like. You also have to keep in mind, Ramon Marquez is 23.
Right.
Like, yeah. Ramon Marquez, there is so much in there, but he's still learning how to be a major league pitcher, and that's understandable to this point. It's just so tantalizing because the stuff is so good when he flashes it well.
Right, and Kyle Freeland, too, he is improving his swing and miss rate. He's gone 7 innings each of his last 2 starts, giving up 3 runs total in those starts. You want to see if he can continue to be better because, you know, early in the year, he was having issues getting deep into games, throwing too many pitches, maybe nibbling a little bit. But the last 2 starts against San Diego and at the Cubs, he really just went out there and started firing his, you know, his fastball in there. Good slider. He's been outstanding in that regard. And I want to see more of that because you combine him with John Gray, who's looked very good his last 2 starts, with Tyler Anderson, who has been excellent. Thank God that he got through that that weird heart issue that he had in Miami.
Yeah.
Only went 1 1/3 innings in that game, had to leave the game with like a regular heartbeat or something along those lines.
Yeah.
So
couldn't catch his breath.
Right.
Like, very strange.
He came out and looked outstanding yesterday, dominated the Cubs, 9 strikeouts and just 3 hits, 2 runs and 7 innings of work. Really his last 3 full starts, or last 2 full starts, the one against the Cubs as well, when he pitched very, very well against them at Coors Field, the one game that they won when he outdueled Yu Darvish again, 2 runs on 6 hits, 6 strikeouts. He is striking out nearly 10 batters per 9 innings. That is a very, very good thing for Tyler Anderson because we've seen a lot more from him than we have seen in the past. We've seen the great changeup. We've seen the fastball get up to 95, which, well, we're not really sure that Tyler Anderson had that in his back pocket, but if he can combine like that, you know, that changeup with a 95 mile an hour fastball from the left side with the weird hitch that he has in his delivery, it causes mistiming of swings, and then he can, yeah, drop in like a, you know, 72 mile an hour curveball. That's pretty impressive. And that's,
he was frustrating the hell out of the Cubs doing that yesterday.
Cubs did not like it.
No, not at all. And it was interesting listening to the Cubs broadcast analyze that, because the one thing that they pointed out is, like, yeah, he does a really good job mixing his speeds. He just throws everybody off.
Yeah.
And not sure if it's because of that hitch in the delivery, not sure if it's because of his release point. Like, that's the thing that Tyler Anderson does well. He's good by keeping everybody off balance all the time. And it's not just smoke and mirrors, because his stuff is good too, but he's also just so good with the smoke and mirrors that it makes everything else play up.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's the thing that the Rockies really tried to teach their guys this offseason, the quick pitch, because they saw how effective Chris Russon was with it last year. And Chris Russon's not a guy with overpowering stuff at all, but he was able to be one of the better relievers in the National League last year by mixing up his timings. The quick pitch was a big part of that. It frustrated hitters. Remember Justin Turner last year just throwing his bat, throwing his helmet up in the air after getting quick pitch 3 separate times by Chris Russon, just freaking out about it. If you noticed, every pitcher that doesn't have dominant stuff, besides John Gray this year, they've utilized that quick pitch in some way. Chad Bettis has, Tyler Anderson has, Kyle Freeland has. It's an interesting tactic that not a lot of guys would teach their pitchers. Not a lot of guys would like to do. I don't know. I think it's worked out for them, because you could see there are some great hitters on that Cubs roster, and they were really frustrated yesterday. Flummoxed. They were flummoxed yesterday. Yes.
Yeah. Which is fun to watch. I enjoy that. I enjoy watching the Cubs be very annoyed by the Rockies. By the way, friend of the PDP, Rory Roth, sent me a message yesterday. He was busy destroying Cubs fans on Twitter. Did you know that the Rockies all-time against the Chicago Cubs are 97-100? Cubs fans act like they're world beaters because they won one World Series now. But Rory looked up some numbers. They're 97-100 overall against the Cubs. Since 2010, the Rockies are 29-25. And in 2010 and 2011, the Rockies had four-game winning streaks against the Cubs, as they did also last year. And the largest margin of victory over that time was 17-2. The Rockies beat the Cubs in 2010 in a game at Coors. So the next time your Cubs fan friends, who are, you know, all from Minnesota, tell you about how great the Cubs are, now you know.
I mean, yeah.
You won't have to worry about it until the playoffs, which, you know, we'll see who's there
at the end of
this weird season so far in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
Rockies on the road taking on the New York Mets coming up this weekend, and then home on Tuesday and Wednesday against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, and then the Milwaukee Brewers. Before we go, want to give a plug to a story that was on FanGraphs that was fantastic yesterday. Adam Ottavino and his offseason.
Awesome.
Adam, obviously a longtime fan and friend of FanGraphs, and Travis Sochik wrote a story about, and this is funny because I watched this all offseason on Instagram, but didn't really
think about how
unlikely and weird it really was. But Adam Ottavino worked in a Harlem shop, like a store, a vacant store in Harlem.
Like his father-in-law rented it out to him.
Yeah, for free.
Yeah.
On the contingency that Adam got him a Nolan Arenado sign.
Which is hilarious.
Which is amazing. A vacant storefront between a Chuck E. Cheese's and a Dollar Tree in Harlem. Adam's father-in-law, who is a real estate developer, had this empty property and told Adam he could use it for the offseason to throw. And basically, Adam converted it into an indoor mound, used it all offseason, got other pitchers who figured out what he was doing. And his quote, one of his funny quotes in that story was, "You won't believe how many people come out of the woodwork when they know you have somewhere to throw in the center of Manhattan."
Right.
But just a really cool story about how Adam went to Driveline Baseball and evaluated what he was doing, how he was throwing his slider, wanted to add another pitch, so he developed a cutter over the offseason, and what it's done to turn Adam Ottavino into, right now, the best relief pitcher in baseball.
Not named Josh Hader.
But, you know, his numbers this year, Adam's numbers have been so absurd. 4 hits, 1 run over 17 innings. He has struck out 31 batters against 4 walks, and he's got an ERA of 0.53. And that's after last year, a real struggle.
An abysmal season.
Yeah, it was not fun a year ago. But he is really just the most interesting dude in baseball. And so read that story, because that was a terrific story.
Striking out over 53% of all batters faced this season. And Adam Ottavino, a right-handed pitcher facing left-handed batters this year. Left-handed batters this year against Adam Ottavino are 1-for-25 with 15 strikeouts.
Yeah, how? How is that possible? Good God. Ridiculous.
Righties crush him. 3-for-27 with 16 strikeouts.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, might as well release him at this point.
Yeah.
What's the point? What's the point of keeping a guy like that on the roster?
It's amazing the transformation we have seen from one season to the next for Adam Ottavino, and it's awesome to see, because nobody works harder. You can tell we got to see if we can get him on at some point, or you get in the clubhouse and get a quick word with him at some point.
Yeah. Because
I just want to sit and chat. I always want to talk to him about how he views the game of baseball, because clearly he sees the game differently than most other guys.
He really does. I think that's the perfect way to put it. He thinks more outside the box than anybody else in baseball, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
He's a fascinating dude. We had him on a couple years ago, pre-Tommy John surgery, Adam Ottavino, but it's so good to see him back and see him doing the things that he's doing this year, and been a hell of a lot of fun to watch. I guess that'll just about do it.
By the way,
do a broadcast.
Hyunjin Ryu, out until after the All-Star break, apparently.
Oh, wowzers.
Hits keep on coming for the Doyer.
Goodness gracious. That team is dealing with it right now.
Ugh.
Not fun.
But at least you can watch them on Facebook later today as they take on the D-backs. Have you watched those Facebook games?
No, I have
garbage.
Not.
It sucks.
I have not.
It's awful.
I haven't watched any
of it. The score bug's terrible. The commentating is terrible.
Who calls those games?
It changes every game. Like, they have a designated analyst for each team that is playing, and then a play-by-play guy. So, like, Eric Burns is the guy for the D-backs today, and Oral Hershiser is for the Dodgers. And then I think Rich Waltz, former Marlins play-by-play guy, is doing the play-by-play.
Interesting.
But, man, it is a very tough watch. And if you watch MLB Whip Around later tonight at 11 Eastern on FS1, you'll see the highlights. And it's almost impossible for us as a major television network to grab highlights from it. It looks like we're getting highlights from a high school game. It really does.
Ah, that's good.
It's awful. It's so bad.
That's good.
Like,
that'll be fun.
The concept is great. It's totally fine. Getting
it'll
more
develop,
free baseball.
It'll improve.
Yes, it'll improve, of course. Right now, it is a tough sell.
Well, enjoy that.
Oh God!
Dodgers and
apparently,
D-backs fans.
Gunjin Ryu's groin was torn off the bone, the muscle.
Oh my God!
So, enjoy Thursday, guys. We're out of here.
Gross. Well, man, all the best to Hyunjin Ryu for reattaching a muscle to a bone.
Especially in a very sensitive area.
That is terrifying. Oh God, I'm gonna go spit up blood now. Yep. I guess that'll do it. We'll be back next week. It'll be kind of more of a normal episode. I'm on the road this week traveling for work, and so next week be back home, and we'll get a chance to dive into, I guess, more positive topics. Like, the Rockies are 2 games over .500. We're like, this team can't do anything right, but they're still winning. So take that for what it's worth.
Next Thursday, I'm actually gonna be doing in-game stats at Angel Stadium.
Hey.
With our buddy CJ Nikowski. Yeah.
Nice.
I'm going to be his in-booth stat guy. He's actually doing the game as the play-by-play guy with Mark Gubiza.
Cool.
So the game's on FS1, and he asked if I would be his stat guy for the booth, and so
nice.
I get to do that for the first time, so that'll be fun.
Very cool.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. Cool. So we'll plug that again next week, and all you big Mastertonians, I don't know what we would call groupies for you.
Mastertonian sounds like an Infinity Wars race, and I saw it last night, and I'm still upset about it. So
I've not seen it yet.
I'm upset.
Okay, well, we can break it down this week. Maybe I'll go see it between now and then, something like that.
You should see it, but you're gonna be upset. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. All right. I guess that'll do it for this week. We'll talk to you next week. Rockies back home on Tuesday. We'll talk to you shortly thereafter. Love you.
Love you. Bye.